We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Joining us right now, as he does each and every Thursday at this time, is our baseball insider from Fox Sports, Ken Rosenthal. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
Very well. How's it going?
Hopefully you're having a calm blue ocean kind of week as opposed to, maybe A-Rod or somebody.
I think I'm in a little bit better place than A-Rod right now. And let me just say this about A-Rod before we go any further. Both incidents, well, one's not an incident, one's a, I don't know what you call it, the tabloid part of it, and last night's incident of zone making. And you can talk all you want about whether it's justifiable for the New York Post to do that. We all have our opinions on that. I don't think it's what any of us got into journalism for. At the same time, he's out there, and he puts himself in position to get his picture taken. And as for last night's thing, where he yelled at an infielder on the Blue Jays as a pop-up was coming down, not a foul pop-up on the play, you just don't see that a lot. And you certainly don't see the reactions that the players have a lot. I'm sure it goes on, but the way the Blue Jays reacted was so vehement that he apparently did cross a line.
Well, and that was part of the debate I was having with Dale earlier today. How prevalent do you think it is, not just that incident, but any type of play outside of the unwritten baseball rules? How prevalent do you think that goes on? How prevalent does that happen in Major League Baseball?
I don't know, Michael. That's a really good question. That's one of those questions you really would only know from being down there and hearing what goes on. And when I'm down there close to the field during those Saturday broadcasts, I don't think I hear much of that. But I'm sure it does go on from time to time. This seemed to be some type of breach. And, again, just by the way they reacted and what he did, and, of course, we all remember the Bronson Arroyo play in the ALCS that one year, which was also a breach. You don't see that all the time either. And A-Rod has a way of ticking people off with his words, with his actions, and it's a shame because he's a wonderful player.
Ken, we were talking about this earlier with the Bronson play, as you mentioned. Earlier this year, you had the pop-up slide and the elbow to the groin of Dustin Pedroia, and now this one.
Yep.
Does A-Rod do this sort of thing more than everybody else, or do we just focus on it because he's A-Rod and plays for the Yankees?
I think maybe a little of both. And certainly A.J. Pruszynski is a guy, a White Sox, who has a way of ticking guys off the field with things like this. He spiked Justin this week crossing first base, and the Twins were set by that. I think A-Rod seems to be a bit of an agitator in his own way, and I don't know if it comes from frustration. He would tell you it just comes from his desire to win, and he's looking for every edge, and I understand that. I appreciate that, but at the same time, the players know. They know when guys cross the line. They know when guys play hard and play hard in a good way. And when they react the way the Blue Jays did, and the way Pedroia did, Pedroia, a rookie, for heaven's sake, I think that tells you all you need to know.
All right, big fella, enough of A-Rod. I'm going to come right into your wheelhouse. I'm going to ask you about the Baltimore Orioles. How credible are they? How legitimate are they? Are they a threat to those Orioles teams in the 1970s that had four 20-game winners?
Are you kidding me, Michael?
Of course. Of course, I'm kidding you.
I'm trying to figure out which team is the most credible threat to the Red Sox, and I think you should stop looking.
No, but seriously.
There probably isn't one.
I know the Orioles are not a very good team, but how good are they, in your opinion?
I just think that they don't have enough power, and also they're starting pitching. They've lost quite a bit. They've lost Jarrett Wright and Chris Benson and Adam Loewen, three of their five originally planned starters, and while Steve Traxel's coming in and done a good job, and Jeremy Guthrie's coming in and done a good job, I think overall they're short there. Their bullpen not perform the way they expected when they spent all the money, and have, I don't know how to exactly phrase this, but some type of clubhouse/leadership problem. And the reason I say that is because you see players pop off in the papers quite frequently with them about playing time. We've heard from Millar this year. We've heard from Jake Gibbons. beef with Pilato. He wasn't informed about a day off, and he was ticked off about that. And you've seen some incidents on the field, too, where guys were arguing on the field and things breaking down of that nature. So, to me, it gives every appearance of a team that lacks A, veteran leadership that could stop that kind of thing. Some teams have that. And B, a manager who would step in and say, hey, boys, enough. None of this. So, I do think that while they have some interesting pieces, I don't think they're a pretty good team. And I don't think they're going to be above 500 all said and done.
You know, you've got a great quote in your piece this week from a scout watching Roger Clemens' 6 shutout innings at AAA. And just to give folks the quote that's in your piece, he said, quote, he was 88 to 91 miles per hour with a big looping curveball. I don't know if that will get through Detroit's lineup consistently. It certainly won't get through Boston's lineup consistently. He'll pitch skillfully, just like Pedro does, but he'll be a middle-of-the-rotation guy. It'll be a little bit like what happened with Randy Johnson coming back to the American League at the wrong time, unquote. Is that why Joe's not using him at Fenway this weekend?
I don't think that's the sole reason. I think the biggest reason is that Roger is a guy, as we all know, who gets amped up. And in this situation, where he's going to be amped up anyway because it's his first start back, why throw him into that cauldron when you have your 3 top pitchers right now lined up as it is? It's not as if they've got to throw Carstens out there or Chase Wright or any of the other guys that they've been using, Tyler Clippard being the latest. So when you have Juan Messina Pettit lined up ready to go, you might as well just stay on track and keep Roger in what will be a lower intensity environment and against a team that's not hitting as well. Why not give him a good foundation? This idea that he has to start against Boston, that he's chickening out, I don't buy it at all. It's absurd. And I just think it's the healthiest thing for everyone. Because to me, if he pitches in Boston, as jacked up as he'll be, it's a blown hamstring waiting to happen.
Now, we understand why a couple of those pitchers are going for the Yankees against the Red Sox. Wong is a very good pitcher, probably their best. Andy Pettit has pitched well this year with not a lot of support, run support. Mike Mussina has not pitched that well. What is the story with him, Ken?
I think he's older. And I think with him, he's just not as consistent as he once was. Obviously, the velocity is down. That's a problem. He doesn't have the bite on his breaking ball that he once did. There are days when he does have some semblance of all of these things, and he's good enough and smart enough where he can put the ball where he wants it on those days. But I just don't think he's going to do that consistently enough anymore. He's always pitched well for the most part against the Red Sox, but I think now he's a guy with lesser stuff and a guy that they could abuse.
I've always looked at him. I don't know about you. You saw him in Baltimore during his heyday when he was great.
Right.
I always looked at him as a classic number two. What would you say he is right now?
4. And that's not saying that on a certain day he can't be a number two. But overall, when you look at his numbers and we look at what he's doing, he probably is a 4. And he's had a great career. It's funny. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Because if you describe him, Michael, at best as a number two, well, that type of pitcher is not a Hall of Famer. But when it's all said and done, he's probably going to have around 250 wins. And he has had a really good career pitching his entire career in the American League East. Not easy to do. So I think what he's done is really admirable, but I just think he is at a point where he's in decline.
Ken, we asked you a little bit last week about Elijah Dukes, the Tampa Bay rookie outfielder, and his off-field personal problems with his wife and death threats. The team kept him out of the lineup for a couple of days, put him back in the lineup. He's back in there now. It's back in the news today after a judge has put in a restraining order, a second restraining order. Is there going to come a point where Elijah Dukes is going to be too much of a liability for the Devil Rays to keep sticking him out there?
That's a really good question, and I think it's a question that they have to be looking at each and every day. The problem with Elijah Dukes, if you're just saying cut him loose and you're the Tampa Bay Devil Rays and you're trying to win games, is Elijah Dukes is a pretty good hitter. I think he leads all Major League rookies with 9 home runs, and what they want to do, ideally, Tampa Bay, is see him kind of get through all this and become a guy that is not only a very successful Major Leaguer, but someone that can be a decent human being as well. Now, the history, the arrest, the suspensions, it's all long enough to give you great pause when considering whether he can become that kind of guy. And I think you can certainly ask the question, why didn't they just release him? But they feel that this is a marital dispute. He's not been even charged with a crime. And it would be unfair, in their opinion. They think that marital disputes can get out of hand, as we all know, and things happen. I don't excuse any of this. I'm not trying to. I'm just giving the explanation. If it were me and it were my team, I would release him. Because I think, as an owner, you have to take a certain moral stand. I think there's certain things you cannot tolerate. And the problem with releasing him, I'm sorry, he hit his 10th home run last night, by the way. The problem with releasing him is we don't know if that tape is legitimate that the wife produced. We don't know if the picture's legitimate. And everyone is entitled to their side of the story. But I'm real close to that point where if I'm them, I'm saying, hey, is this worth it? And is this the kind of image we want to project?
Well, Kenny, this is a pretty talented player, as you pointed out.
Very talented player.
I think he would be playing even if Rocco Baldelli didn't have injury problems. But the fact is, Baldelli does have injury problems. What is the latest with him? Is this going to be the story throughout his career? What's going on with him?
Well, that's a fair question. Will it be the story throughout his career? He is supposedly pretty close. And when I say close, I mean maybe a week or two away. He's making progress faster than they thought. But he's had a history of hamstring problems, as everyone knows. And it's a shame because he's got tremendous talent. What's going to be interesting is if he can get on the field by, say, June 15th, at that point he should be able to show enough to maybe enhance or entice a team into trading for him, because that's the Devil Rays' position right now. Is they're a little bit in a situation where they have a surplus of outfielders. He could be available. He's the guy they most likely would trade, especially if they think Dukes is going to be a player for them. So all of these things figure into the Dukes equation, as well as just where the team is. And I heard a guy say this spring that Elijah Dukes, getting back to him, was as talented a guy as Albert Bell, maybe even more talented, but the same kind of volatile personality. And Albert Bell played a long time. Didn't do anything like what this guy did while he was a player. He certainly had some incidents off the field after he left the game of this nature, or similar anyway. But you can only hope that the guy straightens out. I just don't see much of a track record to indicate that anything's going to change. And it's unfortunate to say that. You always think people can straighten out. But it's been a long, tough road for Elijah Dukes.
I'm not a big fan of team meetings because generally if you don't go out and perform well in the aftermath of a team meeting, what have you accomplished? Jerry Remy said on the telecast the other night, the time to have a team meeting is just before you've got the exact pitching matchup you want, so that you can say, see, we turned
right.
It all around.
Right.
Yankees had one, went out, got beat 7-2. Cubs had one yesterday, a players-only meeting, got nipped 9-0 last night against Florida. Are the Cubs having some issues here right now?
Cubs and White Sox have big issues. And the Cubs are a team where the pieces don't fit. And you look at the talent on paper, it's really good. But their bullpen has kind of fallen apart here. They've got some older relievers who are not performing. They're everyday team, well, they've got four left fielders. They've got a duplication with DeRosa and Terrio, both kind of super utility men. And they're two right-handed. So they just haven't really found their way. And the one thing that's been very disappointing, I'm sure, to the manager, Lou Piniella, is that they've played fundamentally very poorly as well. Do they have talent? No question they have talent. Can they be a team that steals a mediocre division? Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. But right now, they need to get it together, and each day they say that, and it doesn't happen, and we're talking about late May here.
You know, Kenny, it sounds like, and let's see if you agree with this, if they were in the NBA, they'd have major problems because they'd have problems moving some of these guys, moving their contracts, the restrictions with the salary cap. But in baseball, it's probably a general manager's dream that you actually have talent so you can fashion a team off of the talent that you have with some trades.
Yes, but the contracts do play into it, as you know. And they've got Cliff Floyd and Jock Jones, for instance, both left-handed hitters. They probably didn't need Floyd, as it turns out, but they wanted another left-handed presence because they are so right-handed. Well, Jock Jones is a guy that is affordable, but he's not really he's not an impact-type player, for sure. He's not even hitting for power this year. So he's hard to move. You're not going to move Soriano or Ramirez or Derek Lee. You're not going to move Cliff Floyd, most likely, and I'm not sure they want to. What I think they should do is get the kid up, Felix Pie, the center fielder, and even if he doesn't hit, They play in the National League, and for goodness sake, if you've seen the National League lately, none of the teams hit. And the Cubs are better than most. They have a more of an American League look than most. I would play PA, figuring that they could carry his offense. That would improve their defense. And, yeah, I'd have to move a Jock Jones or a Cliff Floyd or a Matt Mertens, somebody, to just kind of ease the logjam that they have there.
After the Red Sox game ended on Tuesday night, I flipped over to ESPN, and I watched extra innings of the Mets game.
Yeah.
And I saw Armando Benitez commit two walks in the 12th inning and give up a walk-off home run. You know, you could almost see Mets fans salivating as he came into the game for the Giants. Is he still a useful, everyday kind of closer player in this league?
No, not a closer. And he will do things, and he'll go good for 2 weeks or whatever, and then something like the other night will happen. And the first block was, by all accounts, one of the invisible kind.
Yeah, that one was tough to figure.
Tough to see. But at the same time, that doesn't mean he has to commit the second one, nor allow the home run to Delgado. So he's a guy that his whole career has had immense talent, but has struggled really to seize control of that role, and he's had some physical problems later. For whatever reason, his makeup just doesn't seem suited to that whole thing. He doesn't have the presence that you'd want out there, and it's a shame because there's been great talent, and it just hasn't been a situation where his career has translated the way a lot of people thought it would.
Hey, Kenny, you ready for a totally unfair question?
Sure.
All right. What's the game of the week this week on Fox?
I knew we were getting to this eventually. It is Yankees at Red Sox.
Get out of here. Come on.
Are you serious?
If I were you, I'd rip Fox for putting on a last-place team or the first-place team.
You know, there's a lot of talk up here about the gap in the American League East, and I know you kind of referred to it briefly early on. Realistically, short of, you know, having three starters go down or something, do you see anybody overtaking this team in the East?
No. And listen, the most dangerous thing anyone who follows baseball can say is the phrase, it's over. Because we know in this game there's no clock, the season's 162 games, and it's rarely over until, of course, it is over. But realistically, who is it going to be? Is it going to be the Yankees coming from behind like the 1914 Miracle Braves, the only team in history to come back from more than 14 games? I don't think so. And it's certainly not going to be any of the other three teams. So, barring a series of injuries that would throw things awry for the Red Sox, I really don't see them blowing this lead or having much of a problem winning the division. I think their starting pitching is simply too good to have a long losing streak. Obviously, things change if, say, two of their three main parts go down, two or three main parts go down. But right now it's not that way, and, man, they look really good.
You know, we were talking about it earlier. The key here, and Theo said earlier today on the station, obviously starting pitching is the key, but they are almost, in my opinion, they're almost slump-proof as a team. Because you can't imagine going five games in a row without a good pitching performance.
Provided everyone's healthy.
Right.
And I agree with that. I don't see how that could happen with this team. Now, are they going to play at this level all year? Are they going to be a 700 team all year, winning percentage-wise? Probably not. But they are almost slump-proof to some degree. And what's really interesting to me is how last August, things were so dire. And now the Yankees are in that position, and the Red Sox are in this position of seemingly great strength. And it's quite a turnaround. It's one of the more rapid turnarounds you'll see from a team at that level. I'm not talking about a low-revenue team coming up and being the Milwaukee Brewers of this year or whoever, the Detroit Tigers of last year. I'm talking about from where they were last August to now, how they've done this and what has happened and the kind of team that they put together, a team that you can argue on some levels hasn't clicked entirely. I mean, while Youkilis and Lowell are playing probably above themselves, Manny certainly has not. J.D. Drew certainly has not. Lugo, from an offensive standpoint, certainly has not. So it's a very well-balanced club. I like that they've added speed. I like the way Pedroia has come on, and they're fun to watch right now.
Well, enjoy watching them again on Fox this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Ken.
Kenny.
Take care. Ken Rosenthal from Fox Sports, our baseball insider.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.